I'm Anne Maria Wadd.
And I'm Sue Lincoln. This is Rue Radio.
Many cities are known for their public art. Will Baton Rouge be the next? Case Duckworth took a tour of the murals done by the Walls Project and talks with the founder.
Debtors' prisons have long been illegal in the United States, but the ACLU of Louisiana says the practice of jailing those who are too poor to pay court fines is alive and well. Anne Marie talks with Marjorie Essman of the ACLU for today's Insight.
An LSU scientist's discovery of a new rat species may help us learn more about evolution. Frank Barnett sat down to talk with him about the hognose rat for this week's Louisiana's Lab.
Dan Gill has tips for maintaining your most important gardening tool, your body.
Many issues are in play for Saturday's election, the biggest among them being the state's budget woes. However, one pollster says that reason alone may actually discourage voters from going to the polls. Capital Access takes a look at voter apathy, but first, the news.
This is 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Discover with us. Listen on your smartphone with the free WRKF app available for Apple and Android devices.
Welcome back to Rue Radio. I'm Sue Lincoln.
And I'm Anne Maria Wadd. The Walls Project is a Baton Rouge nonprofit that's been painting about 10 murals a year since 2012. Most of their artists' work is downtown, though they've started expanding to mid-city and North Baton Rouge. Starting this month, they'll offer biking and walking tours of their murals. Case Duckworth took his own tour with Walls Project founder Casey Phillips.
Downtown Baton Rouge has been a work in progress, which is why you hear all of this construction noise. And Casey Phillips likes to think he's had a hand in that progress.
We decided to start in downtown specifically because we saw the opportunity to help something that was already happening, right? Like the movement back to the urban core of the city, that's happening all across the state. It's happening all across the country, the resurgence of people's downtown. I mean, we can get into the sociological reasons. I mean, the post-GI Bill and the urban sprawl, and you saw a necessity to have to reinvest and reinvigorate the downtown core.
To reinvigorate downtown, you need businesses and business people. Back in his office, Phillips says that they are just as interested in art as anyone else.
From the business sector, a lot of engineers, a lot of lawyers, a lot of lobbyists, they have an appreciation for arts and culture, but there was kind of that gap of how to, like, besides going to a gallery and buying, you know, a painting, which sometimes can be a very intimidating process if you don't have a formal training or background in, you know, public art was a way for people who wanted to support the arts that they were able to invest in something that was very easily accessible to people and themselves.
Phillips founded the Walls Project to make art more easily accessible in Baton Rouge. The project began in 2012 with a Kickstarter campaign for a collection of murals on the corner of Florida and 4th Streets. We walked to the first mural in the shade of the McGlynn, Glisson, and Mouton building, right across the street from two other murals, one on Harrington's Cafe and the other on the Mentorship Academy.
This is our first one.
This one right here?
Yeah, this is the first one. The first guy to say yes, right? The first person in the business community to say yes.
The project exceeded its original Kickstarter goal, and it's met its goal of completing about 10 murals in Baton Rouge each year. But that doesn't mean it's been easy. Phillips says that finding all the blank walls for murals can be challenging, to say nothing about funding the artists.
I don't care if people say no, because there'll be people that say yes. And so we bang on doors and we ask them if they'll paint. Some people will not only say yes, but they're also like, you know what? We want to help fund this. And then we go and procure some more sponsor dollars, or we write grants, or we find angels, or, you know, we go back in our backyard with our money tree and we take some money off and we make it happen.
The Walls Project is not just about murals downtown, though. They're working hard to make art available to tourists and locals who don't have a car.
I don't have a driver's license and I bike everywhere.
That's Maya Curtis, who's leading bike tours around the Walls murals starting this month.
I think that's a kind of a situation for a lot of people in the city that don't necessarily always have a car, or there's one car per family. So I think that would help, you know, revitalize downtown, see more people walking and not a mass exodus of, like, the downtown. It kind of looks like there's a zombie apocalypse when you, like, come here at 4:30.
One of the bike tour stops will be at the third mural, which takes up the whole back corner of the little park on 7th and Convention Streets. It's a parade scene full of people, tents, musicians, row houses, and downtown Baton Rouge. It's a scene that's familiar to Louisianans.
this part of our culture in Louisiana, I mean, it's just like, it's kind of the undeniable, you know, common denominator, so to speak, right? The revelry level of Louisiana, despite being, you know, 49th or 50th in a lot of categories, has not seemed to dampen the party, you know, and in the cel- and I don't want to use the word party because that makes it flippant, the celebratory nature of us as people.
It's that celebratory nature that Phillips hopes will bring people together through art. For WRKF News, I'm Case Duckworth.
The Walls Project announced earlier this month that New Orleans painter Elise Toups will be painting their 29th mural in Mid-City. You can check out her work at elisetoups.com. Mural number 30 will be painted by another New Orleans-based artist by the name of Lionel Milton. His work is at lionelmilton.com.
Criminal justice reform has become a widely discussed issue of late, with a group of 120 police chiefs and prosecutors across the country forming a coalition called Law Enforcement Leaders to Reduce Crime and Incarceration just this week. One way to reduce Louisiana's world-topping incarceration rate may be to crack down on the practice of jailing those who are too poor to pay court fines. On this week's Insight, a look at debtors' prisons.
This is Insight. I'm Anne Maria Watt. In 1833, the federal government banned debtors' prisons in the United States. In 1972, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals in New Orleans ruled that pay or stay practices, which compel someone to pay a court fine on the spot or be jailed, were also illegal. In 1983, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that people can only be jailed for refusing to pay court fines, not for being too poor to do so. According to a recent report by the ACLU of Louisiana, these practices are still happening today. Joining me from the studio at WWNO in New Orleans is Marjorie Essman of the ACLU. Thanks for joining me.
My pleasure.
It seems as though this is actually something of a national trend.
That's right. It is a national problem, and it's a problem that should not exist because, as you said, it was declared illegal many times decades ago.
And even here in Baton Rouge, there's actually a current debate over whether or not the parish should open a misdemeanor jail.
Well, yes, and I understand that that was just defeated, which was a good thing. The idea of jailing people for misdemeanors makes absolutely no sense. And I understand that it was justified as a way to make sure that people actually fulfill their obligations, but in many cases, people don't because they can't, and you're not, you know, you can't get blood from a stone, as they say. If somebody doesn't have the money, they don't have the money. They can't pay no matter what.
For the average person listening, these are court fines. These are citations. They're tickets. Some would think that, you know, why should I feel bad for somebody who's not going to pay this fine? So can you elaborate what kind of fines that people are being thrown in jail for not paying?
It can be a lot of different things. It can be littering. It can be a parking ticket. It can be, minor, you know, disturbing the peace kinds of things that aren't really violent or dangerous. And remember that when people say, and I hear this all the time, oh, well, you know, if you can't pay the fine, you shouldn't do the crime. But if you turn that around, that kind of is saying that if you can afford to pay, you can do anything you want. And that's not the kind of legal system we want, where, you know, if you're rich, you can pay any kind of fine and get away with whatever you want. But if you're poor, you end up incarcerated for the same thing. That's not fair. And these fines are intended to be a deterrent. They're intended to be a kind of a slap on the wrist to say, you know, you broke a minor rule. We can't have people breaking rules. So here's a little penalty. But, you know, if you get a fine of, let's say, $200, which is not an uncommon fine, for some people, that's, you know, groceries for a month.
That seems to be a theme throughout the report that I saw, this kind of idea of impossible choices, where you have a lot of these case studies of people who are essentially choosing between rent and paying their court fines, or groceries and paying their court fines, as you mentioned, or people who show up to court not realizing that they're going to be required to pay that day on the spot.
That's right. I mean, there are some instances where you know, the court will say, you know, $200 cash right now on the spot. You don't have it, 30 days in jail. You know, how many people walk around with cash like that in their pockets?
What I'm thinking is, you know, we have an election coming up this weekend. And so are there any recommendations that the ACLU is making in regards to this phenomenon of debtors' prisons to the next governor?
They can revamp the entire criminal code to eliminate those kinds of things. But a lot of these are municipal offenses. And these things happen most often in local municipal courts. And so I would suggest that for people who are voting in municipal elections, pay attention to making sure that the council that you're electing and the judges that you're electing are going to be sensitive to this issue and are going to be accountable to follow the law, because this practice is against the law.
Marjorie Essman, thank you so much for joining me.
My pleasure.
This is Insight. I'm Anne Maria Wadd.
Thanks for joining us on 89.3 WRKF. Wake up to WRKF with the WRKF app's built-in alarm clock, available for Apple or Android.
You're listening to Rue Radio. I'm Anne Maria Wadd.
And I'm Sue Lincoln.
The Foundation for Historical Louisiana's Old Governor's Mansion Gala will be held on October 29th. The 17th annual gala celebrates the 250th anniversary of the Acadians in Louisiana. Tickets can be purchased at fhl.org.
The secluded Indonesian island of Sulawesi is home to many mammals not found anywhere else on Earth. One LSU scientist helped to discover one new species, the hog-nosed rat, which may hold the key to a better understanding of evolution in mammals. Frank Barnett has this report for Louisiana's lab.
Most people tend to avoid rats like the plague, but not so for Dr. Jake Esselstyn.
One new rat in 2014, I believe. Another rat in 2012. Oh no, two other rats in 2014.
Esselstyn is curator of mammals at LSU's Museum of Natural Science. He's discovered new species of rats with Dr. Kevin Rowe, senior curator of mammals at Museum Victoria in Melbourne, Australia. Since 2010, the pair has worked with Indonesian scientists to study the diversification of rats from Asia to Australia. And Dr. Rowe says their main focus has been the island of Sulawesi in Indonesia.
So Sulawesi is a remarkable place geographically because it's really like four continents coming together, but not quite connected, all isolated by deep ocean channels.
And the rats?
So they've been able to cross these open ocean water. They're the only non-flying mammals to make the crossing from Asia to Australia besides humans.
That makes Sulawesi a continental crossroads, meaning they're discovering new rat species on the island that have been isolated for millions of years. In their latest publication, The Hognosed Rat, Hieronymus stumkii, which they discovered in 2013. With a nose like a pig and long tusk-like teeth, Dr. Esselstyn says Hieronymus isn't your average rat.
They have long hind limbs, so we think they hop. The claws on their hands are more like fingernails than they are like claws, and we're not sure why that is.
And Dr. Rose says that's why they're on Sulawesi, to find answers to questions like this.
It's about trying to understand what are the environmental requirements of species on this island and how isolation on the island allows evolution.
And they both agree that more rats have yet to be found. For Louisiana's Lab, I'm Frank Barnett.
Support for healthcare and science coverage on Louisiana's Lab comes from Bazile, Saxe & Wilson, serving the legal and business needs of people and companies throughout Louisiana, and from ExxonMobil Baton Rouge, supporting education in science, technology, engineering, and math.
What makes a good governor? We partnered with Louisiana Cultural Vistas magazine to figure it out. They traveled the state to speak with former governors Edwin Edwards, Buddy Romer, Mike Foster, and Kathleen Blanco. You can hear their answers to that question, as well as their advice for the next governor, at WRKF.org.
Many folks don't consider gardening a chore, but it is hard work. How often do you come back inside with an aching back? Dan Gill has tips for maintaining your most important gardening tool, your body.
Welcome to Bayou Garden on 89.3 WRKF. I'm Dan Gill with the LSU Ag Center. As the weather cools down, it's a joy to get out into the garden on the weekends. There's often a lot of catch-up to do after the long, hot summer, as well as this is the prime planting season for cool-season vegetables, cool season bedding plants and hardy trees, shrubs, vines, and ground covers. But the strenuous activity can cause problems, especially for those of us who get very little exercise during the week. Sore muscles, aching backs, blisters, and even sprains are common complaints of the weekend gardener. So here are some tips for maintaining your most important gardening tool, your body. It's important to use proper body positioning to minimize muscle fatigue and soreness. Before you begin gardening, take a few moments to stretch out your muscles and do a few stretching exercises. Try to let your general daily physical activity serve as your guide for how long you can work in the garden. If you get very little exercise during the week, then make sure you take lots of breaks. Maybe work for 30 minutes and then take a few minutes break. If you do get a lot of exercise and you're in pretty good shape, well, go ahead and garden for longer periods, but don't push yourself too much. Even if you don't feel fatigued, it's great to take a break for just a few minutes every half hour or 45 minutes. Make sure you drink plenty of cool water. Be sure to bend at the knees and hips and not at your back whenever you're lifting up and holding objects. And we're bending over and picking up objects all the time. Squat down, pick up the object, and then stand back up again. Use an erect body posture when working with long-handled tools, such as hoes or shovels or rakes. Keep the elbows of your arms partially bent while you're gardening, especially when you're doing resistant activities, like pushing on something. Keep your elbows bent, otherwise you'll put a lot of strain on that joint. Also avoid twisting your forearms back and forth and back and forth. This is often something we do when we're pulling weeds. Consider using a weeding tool to dig the weeds up and then remove them. It's also important to choose your tools properly. Now, avoid tools that seem awkward for you to use. Try them out at the nursery. Make sure that they feel right. Ergonomic tools that are designed around human anatomy and proper body mechanics are really ideal to use. Try to use lightweight yet sturdy tools. Aluminum is a good lightweight metal to use in tools. Now, all the handles of your tools should be covered with rubber to minimize friction, and that will reduce blisters. Be sure to keep your tools sharp. That makes them work better and easier. And keep them in good working order and keep them well oiled. Again, a properly functioning tool is easier on you as you use it. Now, gardening gloves are a real important topic when it comes to gardening. Gloves protect our hands from hazardous chemicals, sharp items, and can prevent blisters. And they help minimize the effects of vibration. On the other hand, gloves can decrease the feeling in our hands and decrease hand strength by as much as 30%. Now, gloves should be form-fitting without being restrictive, so make sure they're sized properly. Thin gloves are preferable, even though they generally wear out faster than thicker gloves. Remember, the thinner gloves will give you more feeling in your hands. Gloves should be made of a material that's appropriate for the specific task, such as rubber gloves if you're mixing chemicals, leather gloves if you're pruning, and cloth gloves for digging in the soil. So, think as much about taking care of yourself as you do about taking care of your gardening. After all, we only have one body, and it needs to last us as long as we have gardens to tend. This is Bayou Garden. I'm Dan Gill. Join us next week at this time for more on your garden. Podcasts of the show are available at wrkf.org.
The LSU Horticultural Club will be selling plants on Monday and Tuesday from 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. at the corner of Stadium Drive and Highland Road.
By the time early voting ended last week, only 7.6% of the state's registered voters had turned out to cast their ballot. Because of the lower turnout, Secretary of State Tom Shedler expects that overall, a little less than half of Louisiana voters will turn out for tomorrow's election. One reason may be voter apathy. Sue Lincoln has more for this week's Capital Access.
This is Capital Access. I'm Sue Lincoln. More than a few political experts have voiced dismay over apparent voter apathy as we head into Saturday's primary election. Pollster Bernie Pinsonat says that's because the budget problem, big as it is nothing new.
The sky's falling has happened for the last 7 years in Louisiana. We went broke again, and that's been going on forever.
Lawmakers have managed to avoid the doomsday scenarios thus far, meaning the people don't have to worry right now.
They know something's wrong, but it hasn't resulted in people paying more taxes.
Pinsonat says while the media has tried to awaken the public to what's at stake this time,
they don't believe us anymore. They don't believe the headlines that the sky's falling and we're going to close everything.
In many ways, Pincinat says, the news coverage of the fiscal crisis is diverting voters from what they might otherwise focus on, candidates' personalities.
When the candidates themselves are really pushed to the background, and there's so much static and noise out there, and it's hard to break through, I think that also is a problem.
He says the involvement of PACs and super PACs in the races have also diverted voter focus from the qualities candidates want voters to see.
There's an outside big wad of money sitting there tearing down what you want to portray.
That means more PACs are needed to play defense.
You have to have another group in the other room figuring out how can I overcome all these negative ads distorting my image I'm trying to portray in the campaign.
Pincinat says that results in more noise and less voter engagement. For Capital Access, I'm Sue Lincoln.
Support for Capital Access comes from Southern Strategy Group, governmental relations, strategic planning, and public relations in Baton Rouge, and Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, supporting Louisiana agriculture through education.
This is Rue Radio. I'm Anne Marie Awad.
And I'm Sue Lincoln. The Pumpkin Paddle Parade will be held October 29th from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. Get in the Halloween spirit by paddling in the dark along the shoreline of the University Lakes. Everyone is encouraged to dress in costume and add some lighting to their watercraft. More information is available at breck.org.
Beginning October 30th, Theater Baton Rouge presents The Miracle Worker. Running until November 15th, the classic tells the story of Annie Sullivan and her student, Helen Keller. Showtimes are available at theaterbr.org.
The Zombie Bash will be held on Halloween morning in downtown Baton Rouge this year. Start your morning with a costumed 5K or a one-mile fun run. Stay after the race for food, music, drinks, and more. Visit ofmovingcolors.org for more information.
That's all for the show this week. Follow us on Twitter at WRKF and find us on Facebook. Up next is Out to Lunch with Stephanie Regal. John Tully composed our theme music, and Rue Radio is produced by Nick Jansen.
This has been your food for thought. Until next week.